The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Micro News for Tuesday, the 1st of October, 2024. It's Q4, everyone. That's a reason to be jolly, isn't it? Normally the markets get better. November, December, we got October to get through. Of course, we have the Halloween budget. We are now less than a month away from this hyped-up, scary budget. I don't think it's going to be as bad as they think, because they're getting a bit of a backlash, and they love popularity. Keir loves it. He keeps saying he doesn't care about being popular. Yes, he does. Politicians go in, there's a job to be popular. That's what it's all about. People vote for you on popularity. In fact, he didn't win because of popularity. He won because the Conservative Party was such a chaos and so unpopular. He was basically the default vote, wasn't he? You know. Anyway, this podcast looks at economic data relevant to the UK and news releases from revenue-generating UK microcap stocks, that is, companies with a market capitalization below 100 million. To receive my free tips email, visit sharepickers.com/tips. In fact, two of the companies I have tipped, I don't send one out every week, but are Time Finance and Synectics, both of which are hitting 52-week highs. Yes, and they're proper businesses, generating revenue, profits. Not like most of the trash on AIM, just people pumping and dumping stocks, literally 1 or 2 million market cap. They're never going to get anywhere near making any money ever. It's just a trade. You can't do big trades on tiny microcap stocks. If you get in, you can't get out. You'll tank the price, but if you have any sort of position, or size position, that is. By the way, just by signing up to that list, by the way, you get an added benefit, which I'll mention at the end of the podcast. That's sharepickers.com/tips. Okay, let's look at the markets first and foremost. UK FTSE up 0.44% to 8272. FTSE 250 up a fifth of 1% to 21095. The FTSE small cap up 0.27% to 6959. The AIM All Share down. That's because there's so much trash on AIM. There's so much trash that need to raise money all the time. They've been raising money all their lives on AIM. And in this market, in this environment, they can't raise money. So the index is being dragged down by this trash. But there's some great businesses on AIM. And I mean businesses, not just ideas. I don't consider any company out there that's not making money as a business. It's an idea. All these pre-revenue loss-making companies that, you know, have jam tomorrow. The story's going to be huge. It's going to be a multi-bagger. All, that's just an idea. Okay? So when you see a share price, target price for that, it's like 500%. The risk of achieving that 500% upside is huge. You're better off going for a company that can achieve, you know, 50%. But have a higher probability of achieving it. Let's look at the commodity prices. Brent crude is down again, $71 a barrel, $72 just about. So the risk premium from the Middle East, you know, is that priced in? If it is, we've got a massive problem with demand. Gold, it's going for gold again. It's had a little dip the last 2 days. Out of the last 10 trading days, it's only been down two. It's up today, and that is at $2,671 an ounce. And where is copper? Let's put it to the ton, because it always comes up by default. That's the pound here. But it's just over $10,000 a ton, $10,057. It's come back a little bit the last 2 days, but it has had a rally due to China's massive stimulus. I've got to say, David Tepp, the billionaire investor in America, he called China right. He just went mad going long on all Chinese stuff. Anything Chinese related. Anything. Takeaways, chopsticks. When he says anything, I'm sure he means listed stocks, ETFs, all that stuff. But I do think it's a technical bounce. It's huge stimulus to get, you know, the Chinese people spending, but they've been burnt on property. They are literally just saving their money in cash. They're not going to put it in the stock market, so I think it's a massive technical bounce. It'll come back because their economy is not growing, and I don't think this stimulus will help it grow. They're thinking now they may even get rid of their targets. You know, the growth targets are 5% GDP and all that stuff. They may get rid of them. They just changed the rules to suit the, they had, their unemployment in China was so bad, right? Youth unemployment. They just stopped reporting the figures. There we are. Bad news. Just ignore the bad news. And everything's fine. Let's crack on. Okay, that's the market. Let's have a look at a story. Macro story number one. Business confidence takes a large dive in September as budget fears intensify. City AM. We keep going on about this, and it's self-fueling. It really is. And I don't think Starmer and Reeves understand that. When you feel optimistic, you're not going to go out spending. Like I say, the savings ratio in houses is up to 10%. That's like pre-COVID levels or near COVID levels. We're a bit worried about the economy. That's how worried they are. And when you keep preying on this fear, it's self-fueling. You get companies pulling back on investment, maybe even laying a few people off. Anyway, the Institute of Directors' latest gauge of corporate optimism showed business leaders were increasingly gloomy about their firm's prospects, as well as the economy. More broadly, optimism in the economic outlook fell to its lowest level since 2022, with index dropping to minus 38 in September, down from minus 12 in August. Confidence in firms' own prospects also dipped to 15 in September, having been at 23 in August and 36 in July. Reflecting the increasing negative outlook, firms invest... Listen to this. This is important. Firms' investment intentions... Now, if you're not investing, okay, basically you're tightening your belts. If everyone starts doing that, multiply that up, the implications that have can be huge. So, firms' investment intentions, this is largely down to Reeves and Starmer, are the lowest level since September 2020. That was COVID times. The survey put investment intentions at minus 6 in September, having dropped from 10 last month. Well done, Starmer. Well done, Reeves. Imbeciles. And business leaders are increasingly wary as the budget approaches. The government is widely expected to hike taxes in the budget as it seeks to address an alleged $22 billion black... It's not a black hole. Stop calling it a black... Every the kind of phrasing they're using. It's like a black hole sucks everything into it. This is not sucking everything into it. And that $9 billion is very disingenuous because they created that $9 billion in pay increases for the public sector. So... Oh, they've really, his popularity, Starmer, by the way, is dropping like crazy. So I think, if anything, they'll roll back a little bit in the budget. Because I know this on just Twitter. Twitter is toxic at the moment. It's dying. But I mean, people on Twitter saying, you know, it's his last few days. They're talking about his private life and how his family isn't what it seems. I don't know about all that nonsense, but I do think the pressure he's feeling now may make them wind back, roll back on the budget a little bit. Listen to this. Andy Haldane, former chief economist of the Bank of England, argued that Labour's creation of a sense of fear and foreboding was unnecessary and probably economically unhelpful. Yeah, absolutely, Andy, and that's underestimating it. Story number two. Listen to this. Shop prices fall at their fastest rate since 2021, despite rising fresh food inflation. This is from The Guardian Biz. Overall shop price deflation. Yes, deflation. I hope the Bank of England are listening. The Labour government, the Bank of England. These are really well, you know, what's his name? Andrew Bailey's on £500,000 a year. And he's looking in the rear view mirrors with very, almost, you know, smudgy glasses that need cleaning. First of all, look forward, Andrew. If prices are coming down, inflation is coming down, then what you're looking at, which is service wage inflation, is going to be coming down. They're not going to be raising wages by like 6% for people when inflation is 2%. I don't see how they can't see that. They're worried about service wage inflation. Yes, but those, you know, increase in wages were done when inflation was at 11%, for heaven's sake. So again, half the rate of inflation. And now if we scroll forward and people just match inflation or a little bit above, they get like 3% wage inflation. Oh, overall shop deflation was 0.6% in September, compared with 0.3% in August. So this is minus 0.6. It's double. I'm sure you can do the math there. However, that was led by reductions in non-food items, especially clothing and furniture, amid low demand because of unseasonal weather. Yeah, is it unseasonal weather by that much? Again, last month, in August, it was minus 3. Fresh food inflation increased, so it's gone to 1.5% from 1% in August, as wet weather affected British production of salads and soft fruit. Oof. Soft fruit. Not a huge fan of soft fruit. It depends what it is. My son doesn't. My son's got a problem with soft fruit. He can't even... He has to, you know, analyse an apple before he can eat it. He only eats... what are the green apples called? I can't think of what they're called, but he only eats those apples if they don't have a bruise on it. Olive oil is now more than £9.12 a litre on average, up 42% year on year. Well, we're just going to stop buying that then. Helen Dickinson, chief executive of BRC, the British Retail Consortium, said shop price inflation is now at its lowest level in over 3 years, with monthly prices dropping in 7 of the last 9 months. That's not weather. This was driven by non-food, with furniture and clothing showing the biggest drops in inflation as retailers tried to entice shoppers back. Now, why I do macro news is because if you are an investor in individual companies, you should take a steer from this. If you're looking at companies, you think, oh, that's a bargain, that's, you know, and jump into that. And that company is in leisure or retail, and they sell big ticket items or clothes or whatever. In fact, Next is doing well, but a lot of companies not in that space. But they sell like electrical goods, white goods, all that stuff. Understand, people aren't spending at the moment only on olive oil. It's lathering themselves up in olive oil. You know, and when you got olive oil, you just slip off the sofa. So you ruin your sofa. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you buy more sofas. But yeah, so be aware. The consumer demand is very soft at the moment in non-food items. Before you jump into a stock that you think is cheap, will their next financial report come out and be stronger than the last one? Will it be improving? That's all you're looking for. By the way, they did a manufacturing PMI out today as well, UK. It was expected to be 51.5, and it came in at 51.5, so on the nose for expectations. But this is down from 52.5 previous month. Manufacturing, of course, is takes about 20% of the UK economy. We're more a service oriented economy, 80-odd%. Story number three. This hasn't been widely reported in UK press, but I've been watching CNBC, and this is all they're talking about. About 45,000 workers begin strike at US ports after a breakdown in union talks. And they're worried about pay and automation. And in fact, there are quite a few ports on it. They're largely automated. I think Singapore is one, but in America it's not. But the strike, first by port workers in the US on East Coast, it's the first one by port workers in the US East Coast since 1977, threatens to shut down ports from Maine to Texas. I thought there was one a couple of years ago on the East Coast. Anyway, the estimated strike will cost the economy as much as $5 billion a day. There are now 100,000 containers in New York City area ports alone waiting to be unloaded, now frozen by the strike, and 35 container ships headed to New York over the coming week. So this is what they're saying. The issue is not only the cost, but the backlog. And one guy was saying on CNBC, he said even 2 days of strike would see a backlog of 2 weeks. Now, you know, when you see the US indices at all-time highs, and you think, is anything going to shake this indices? The S&P, it's nuts. It's going up every day. And you think, this is crazy. I think, you know, every now and then, I'm not saying it's going to be a permanent wobble here, a permanent fall-off, but when you consider that there are about two or three corrections a year, this may be, along with the old, you know, the presidential election and the debt ceiling, may be the catalyst that gives the markets a bit of a wobble. So you may see some bargains coming up. That's what I'm saying. I'm never a doomsayer on the markets. The market's always got long term. I'm just thinking, you know, what's the best entry point? And you tend to get the best entry points when you have these worries about the economy. Like one recently we had, it sold off. When was that? Let me go back to the S&P 500. It literally dipped in it by, was it about 5, 6%? No, yeah, 10% it did. That's, let me scroll down. In, yeah, so 10% from July 24th to 6th of August, it dropped 10%. And that was, what was that for? Oh, it was the Japanese, wasn't it? Put up interest rates and the carry trade. And so you realise, things like that, if you're holding a fund and the RSI in a fund, a well-diversified low-cost fund, dips to like, you know, the relative strength index, by the way, if you don't know what that is, then if it dips to like sub 40 on these low-cost, well-diversified funds, that's a buying opportunity. Absolutely is. Anyway, that's the macro. Let's go with the micro. First and foremost, Crossword Cybersecurity, CCS. They've been suspended pending publications of the company's half-yearly report. This company should not be listed. It's one of those subpar companies. Literally, they sort of have to be listed. But trouble is, people don't buy shares in the company. That's the problem. Because if this company was private, it probably wouldn't raise the money. And it's literally, if you look at how much money it's raised in the last few years, it's about 15 million it's lost. And that's quite a lot considering how low the revenues are in this company. It's lost about 15 million in the last year. It never ever made a profit. Okay. Market cap 2 million. So it had revenue growth to 4.2 million this year, but loss before tax of 4.1. And they had 700K of cash. And they did a £500,000 fundraise in July. How long is that going to last? It's not going to last. So what you get is, you know, AIM is a source of, you know, of funds for companies. They're supposed to be to fund growth in promising companies that will end up being profitable. Companies like this, who are never going to be profitable, shouldn't be on AIM. And I think there should be a 10-year rule. If you've come to the market 10 years ago and you're still not profitable, you're struck off, full stop, because it drags the whole index down. That is why the AIM All share is suffering, because there's a lot of crap on AIM that do what that company does. Crossword Cybersecurity. Literally, just carry on with an unviable business for 10, 15 years, just milking investors or shareholders of the money. Yes, there's chances of pop and drops, you know, but do you want to be doing that? Jumping in, jumping out. Next, Eco, of course, there's no change in the share price today because it's suspended. In fact, it's the best performance that company's had for a long time. In fact, let me just look at the share price of CCS. Where's it by? So 1.75 pence, okay? Back in June 2019, they were 56 pence. Wow. Talk about value being wiped out for shareholders. Unbelievable. Eco Animal Health Group, a rapidly growing animal health company with a portfolio of marketed veterinary products and a maturing proprietary R&D pipeline, today announces an update on its trading for 6 months ended the 30th of September. And they say the recent challenges we faced in China and Southeast Asia led us to believe that revenue the full year would be materially below market expectations. Or lead us to believe, not led us to believe. That doesn't make any sense. The board expects that adjusted EBITDA for financial year 25 will be in the region of that observed in full year 2023 and notes it is likely that more accurate guidance will be provided when interim results to the 30th are announced in late November. But the board understands market expectations for revenue EBITDA full year 2025 or financial year 25 is supposed to be, so the revenue is supposed to be 92.6 million and EBITDA of 8.2. Now they're saying it's going to be in the region of financial year 2023, which was 85.3. So they're going from a forecast of 92.6 to 85.3 and from an EBITDA of 8.2 to 7.2. And because of that, it's one of the biggest fallers today. It's down 20% to 77 pence. The market cap was 65 million before that drop. So take a fifth of that off that. And that's what you get. Next, J-Wing, the data science and marketing business with operations in UK and Australia. Market cap, 2 million. As set out in the full year results, this is a bit of a trading update here. Trading continues to be challenging overall, but with marked differences by geography and service. Our business in Australia continues its year-on-year revenue growth. You know, it's going to say earnings growth or profit growth. The UK is more mixed. Clients are delaying or reducing spend in many cases, and this has been particularly noticeable in the timing of new clients delivering budgeted revenue. The company is now in constructive discussions with its shareholder lenders in order to secure additional financial headroom to enable the company to complete its restructuring. This is, I don't think this is going to happen. This is almost dead in the water. So they had revenue in the last report, revenue of 21.4 million versus 22, so it's down 2.8. Loss before tax, 2.3 million versus 12.5. So they lost 12.5 million the year before, and then 2.3 million in the last set of results, and they've got net debt of 12.9 million. And that's gone up from 10.3. They've got a market cap of 2 million. It's not a shovel big enough to dig them out of this hole. So I think, you know, I'm particularly worried if you're a J-Wing shareholder. I feel sorry for you there because that does not look good. They're down 15% today. Yeah, 2 million market cap. I don't know what they're going to do for money here. But again, this is another company that's literally 32 pence a share. In fact, it was 17 pence a share in June 2021. And now it's down to 1.9 pence. And frankly, I don't know how they're going to get out of this. That is a black hole, a balance sheet black hole. Because that debt they've got will be sucking everything into it. That's a black hole. The interest payments alone will be sucking the company into it. Next, MPAC Group. MPAC, ticker, the AIM-coded global leader in high-speed packaging and automation solutions, has entered into acquisition agreement for CSI palletizing. Palletizing, so it's pallets, I suppose. But it's called CSI. So they do it almost as a scientific level. anyway, they're paying 56 million euros, which is about 46 million pounds. And they also just raised today. It's a good raise. When you're raising a decent company, which MPAC are, and you're raising money for, you know, an earnings accretive company, then there's money out there. When you're just raising money to keep the lights on, no one wants to know in this market. So they raised 29 million at £4. For the year ended the 31st December 2023, CSI Palletizing's, that's not a good name, CSI Palletizing. We're just going to CSI Pallets. No, it's not sexy. Pallets. We basically sell wooden pallets, mate. You know, the stuff you see down the tip. Yeah. But we do it in a CSI way. Anyway, no, they do, you know, packaging. So the results for 2023 showed 71.5 million euros of revenue and 7.3 million of adjusted EBITDA. I hate adjusted EBITDA. EBITDA is questionable alone, but adjusted. So that's about a 10% margin, isn't it? But it gets better. In the 6 months to the 30th of June, 2024, so the first half, CSI generated revenue of 44.4 million. So we double that pretty much. And you obviously go, you know, 88 versus 71 last year. And 6.8 million of EBITDA. Audited gross assets at the 31st of December were 44.3 million. So it seems like EBITDA margin improved for the first half there. It's gone from like 10% to 15%. But this looks like, so what is that? They're paying 56 for it? I don't know about debt. I didn't look at the debt. That's about, what, six times EBITDA, I suppose? That's all right, isn't it? In fact, whenever you're looking at companies, the decent companies, you know, if you look at what other privately or publicly listed companies are acquiring private businesses for, they are on five, six times EBITDA, you know? So, you know, think about that when you're buying shares in a company. How far off that are you? Are you, if you're paying 10, 12 times, 15 times EBITDA, then ooh. Imagine yourself as a CEO. If you bought a company, CEO of a publicly listed company, and you bought a company 15 times EBITDA, would the shareholders thank you for that? Because remember, you are your own fund manager. When you're, you know, buying and selling shares, you are in charge of your own funds. Anyway, the company, this is MPAC, have significant undrawn borrowing facilities post-completion of the acquisition. Net debt, they say, is expected to be less than two times, net debt EBITDA, this is, expected to be less than two times on completion, and the group is expecting rapid deleveraging to less than one time by the end of financial year 2025 due to high levels of cash generation by the enlarged group. So this looks like a decent acquisition, I think, on the surface. I haven't really looked into it in detail. But they are up. You see, that's what I'm saying. When you do a decent acquisition like this, they are up by 2% to 4.24. So the placement was done at £4, and it hasn't even touched that. That's the difference between a tin pot, rubbish little bit company that has no cash and revenue and just putting placings on, you know, issuing shares like confetti just to keep the lights switched on and the heating on, and the CEO in food and drink and flashy cars, and a company actually, you know, acquiring good business. That is a good business itself anyway, or decentish business, you know. Next, another one that's very questionable. This doesn't look very good. Tribe Technology, a disruptive technology-first developer of manufacturer of world-class autonomous mining equipment, provides the following update in relation to the company's autonomous reverse circulation drill rig. The company's evaluation of the entire drill rig system has concluded that further significant software development and systems integration work is required for the drill rig's operation to meet the required specifications prior to dispatch of the drill rig to the customer's mine site. The board is now pursuing additional funding for its near-term working capital and will provide further update. The fact you've done that, mentioned that even, has scuppered your chance of raising money. Where are they? Tribe, let's play TRYB, Tribe Technology. Yeah, they're down 15%. So already, you know, if you're raising a discount, literally there's more dilution there and a bigger discount than you initially wanted before that RNS went out. I don't see why they even said that in that trading update. Just get it done. Get it done, and then talk about it afterwards. Because that's made it increasingly difficult to raise money. Okay, anything else? No, that's it, I think. Not a lot today. To receive my tips, visit sharepickers.com/tips. Just by signing up to this list means you qualify for 20% off the ShareBickers Investment Club. Members' benefits include early access to the share tips, access to live weekly webinars where multiple stock ideas are analysed and discussed. And often, recently, I've been, you know, really favouring profitable companies for a long time, but we often see companies that are getting close to profitability. In fact, there's one or two companies I've talked about recently, and they've bounced massively recently. I haven't got into them, but we have discussed them on the webinar. And in fact, I know some of the members have got into them. They've done very well. Access to the Microcap League. We're profitable. There's 60 of these now. We tend to whittle these down, look at the quality as well. Where 60 profitable microcap companies are analysed, colour-coded and scored, then ranked on 20 different metrics. A free copy of my book, How to Become a Microcap Millionaire, ahead of official publishing, which is in December. In fact, this Thursday, I'm going up to London to meet the publishers. They're going out for a meal. Ooh. I don't socialise that often. but, you know, you've got to sometimes. You've got to talk to other people apart from your family and your dog sometimes. Access to view my holdings, which I update after any transaction. Access to educational videos on fundamental technical analysis, plus portfolio management, which is very important. Access to the chat group to receive my weekly tips email. And in fact, portfolio management is so important. It doesn't matter if you lose. Let's say you hold 10 stocks. If you lose money on 5 of them, you can still make a lot of money on the other 5 if you do it right. That's all about portfolio management. ShareBickers.com/tips. Have a nice day. Speak tomorrow. Don't know why I said that. Tomorrow. That annoyed me when I said that. Do apologise for that.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. Building wealth through investing. For more information, visit sharepickers.com. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.